Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, and welcoming Diane Briskin, the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction, back to the show. Part of a continuing series with Diane. We're talking about the environment and animals and what we should be doing, what we should or could be doing to make people aware. We encourage everyone to binge listen to everything that we've done together. Diane, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
The last time we spoke, you mentioned, and it's terrible news, it really is, you said that the African lion was put on the endangered list. What does that mean exactly? I mean, how bad does it have to be in order to be on the endangered list?
Well, what happens is they in Africa now, some of the organizations that are over there, each one has a different species. The same thing with the marine biologists. Some study the manatees, other ones study the dolphins. But they put radio collars on these animals and so that they can track them. And they can tell, or they try to get a count of exactly how many are in the wild. And they may track, they may put a collar on a male, they may put a collar on a female. If they put it on the female and they go out with their jeeps, with this little tracking device, they're looking to see if the female had cubs. Well, then they add that too. And they'll take photographs of these animals. And, you know, like the leopards, there's no two leopards that have the same spot pattern. So when they go out and photograph these animals, they'll bring them back and give them a number or give them a name. And now with the lions, what's happening is some of the areas have opened trophy hunting. And these people spend probably thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to go in this area and get a lion, get a rhino, get an elephant. There was an elephant I saw online that had been shot, and it was an older, or not, I'm excuse, sorry, not a lion, an elephant that was shot. And it's, they say that it was one of the oldest ones. They could tell by the tusks, which were 30 feet long.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Now, I don't know what country this particular person came from. The United States, I believe, may still have a ban. I know that Trump took that ban away, which was good for, you know, his millionaire friends that like to go hunting. Yeah. But who's, what customs are going to let him in? I mean, you got 30 feet on one side, 30 feet on the other. I don't know how much they weigh, but nobody's going to let that in the belly of a plane, let alone go through customs. And the sad part about that is the elephant is dead. Yeah. You know, though that was probably most likely was a male, because the males live off by themselves until a female comes in season, and then he goes into musk and goes nuts until he finds a female. But what they're doing is they're taking away the very essence of the animal population. And now with the lions, yeah, they still, you know, they want the heads in their den. And there's a restaurant up where I have a house, and the theater, too. They have taxidermy heads, like of a buffalo, a deer, and a black bear. And I walk through, and my sister doesn't like it because I say, oh, the waiting room of death. And it's a complete display. Yes, it's up north. You know, we've got the animals up there except the buffalo. And to taxidermy these and show them off, to me that's vulgar. You know, if you're gonna shoot an animal because it's injured and it's dying anyway, That's one thing.
That's a mercy killing. But, that's different. You're doing it right, for the good.
Right, yeah, it's a mercy killing. But to go out and deliberately look for an animal like a lion. And on Facebook, there was a picture of this man who was, you know, about as big as an elephant, sitting with his gun behind the lion he killed. Lions are large. I mean, they are big. If you've ever had the opportunity to go to a zoo where there is a glass between you and the lion, and you get close to that lion, we're talking a really large animal.
Yeah, that's for
sure. And to put it in your scope and just kill it, and it really hurt me, because this is a male lion. Yeah, he was gorgeous, just
terrible,
gorgeous.
Terrible.
Right, and people don't think. People in the world are so selfish and greedy. You know, and what is the good of taking, you know, the head of a lion and have it taxidermied? One of Trump's boys was holding up the tail of an elephant.
Terrible. I mean, how do they think that's going to appeal to anyone? Again, Diane Brisky is the voice you're hearing. But I mean, what an arrogant display. I always think, you know, you mentioned the word vulgar about putting the heads of animals there. I don't know exactly who that's impressing. You know, I can see if the lions had a gun too, or if they killed the lion with its bare hands or whatever. But they're shooting a defenseless animal. And don't tell me they're man eaters or they're whatever. They don't bother men if men don't bother them, if they don't go into their environment. It's a disgusting display. I mean, just to see. I mean, the taxidermist. I'm not killing them for what they've done. But I mean, really, to go out and shoot an animal to display it, so you could, you know, show what a man you are, that you destroyed this, you know, living creature, beautiful living creature. Just a disgraceful display. Diane Brisky here with me, Frank McKay. The author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction, again, is Diane Brisky. But, I mean, that in general, hopefully this is a practice that's diminishing. I don't think many people want to be proud of their kills anymore. Some still, maybe in certain areas more than others. But I can't think that the public is so accepting of that the way they would have been, you know, 100 years from now or 50 years from now. Your thoughts on that?
Right. They're not. The people that are going hunting are just doing it for trophies. The people that live in those countries, like India. Now, India was the one place where the white lions came from. Years and years ago, when Siegfried and Roy were beginning their magic exhibitions for, you know, wherever they are in Las Vegas, the mayor of a city in India asked them to come over, and he gave them white tigers. And they brought them back to the States, and their complex, they have acres and acres in Las Vegas. They bred them. And, yes, they were, you know, they were wild, but they got, and I've seen documentaries on these two men, and they were the animals that they have, mostly the cats, thought of them as part of their family. When one of the females would have cubs, these two men would be lying on, you know, a large bed, and she would bring the cub to them. You know, they carry him by the back of the neck. Like, oh, look at here, you know, I got this. Because they treat them not like, well, I don't want to say pets, because wild animals really aren't pets. They treat them with respect. And that's what a lot of people that are going out hunting, they don't respect these animals. The people in India, they don't go out and kill a tiger for the bones or for the pelts. They only will kill a tiger if it's a man-eater. And that means they're coming into the village, they're grabbing kids, and that's because their prey has been depleted. If you're in a territory where tigers are, or where the lions are, or leopards, you're taking your life in your hands because you're going into their housing project. Right. And I don't feel sorry for, like the poacher we talked about last week.
Not in the least.
Yeah, you are not supposed to go scuba diving without a buddy, you know, in case you get attacked by an octopus. You need a safeguard. Well, this, pardon me, dodo, which, by the way, is extinct.
Yeah.
Well, he is now, too.
I have no tears left for a poacher that gets killed by the animals. Karma.
Right.
I mean, I have no tears left for them. It's disgraceful. Good he got what he had coming to him, if you ask me.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And he was on a reserve, and he just happened to, had there be like one lion, that would have been, he might have been a little safeguarded, but this was a pride of lions. So naturally, that male lion is going to protect what's his.
Yeah.
So this guy didn't have a chance. You cannot, I mean, we're talking about an animal that probably can run 30 miles an hour. And this guy, you know, even with the widest stride, is not going to get to tackle him. And the one thing that was in this poacher's favor is his death was quick. Lions and the large cats go for the neck. They snap the spine. So, and when they came looking for this guy, all they found was his hat, a couple of remains, and his rifle. But they're not going to go out and hunt that lion because this guy was where he shouldn't have been. But now that they have the trophy hunting, now the lions are becoming to be endangered.
You know what I hope is that guy's poacher friends go out there looking for him, and the lion makes a snack of them too, to be honest with you. I mean, I have no sympathy whatsoever. Diane Brisky is here with me, Frank McKay, and we're discussing animal life and wildlife and the environment and what we could do to bring more awareness. And we encourage everyone to binge listen to everything that we're doing here. I honestly no sympathy for poachers that get themselves killed. That's what they did. They got themselves killed. I'm not blaming the animal whatsoever. They were where they weren't supposed to be. They were there to kill animals. I mean, let's face it, illegally kill animals. Let them get what's coming to them. And again, I'm not, I never wish anybody dead. But the thing is that there's certain people who lower their value because of what they do to other living things. And I think poachers are down there at the bottom of the list. I think, you know, some of these, whether it's politicians or people that are in corporations that are, and again, I by no means do I wish them ill or harm or whatever, but these people that are responsible for spills, oil spills, and don't do anything about it. I mean, I'm not against business. I'm not against big business. I'm against big business that could care less about the ecology, the environment, animals, just so they can get their bottom line, which is the almighty dollar, and money is their god. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for people like that. They just don't care enough about others around them and things around them to garner any sympathy from me.
That's right. I totally agree with you. I don't know if it's the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. I'm not sure if that's one of the amendments.
Is it the Second Amendment?
Yeah, yeah, well, I would like to go back and amend that amendment and say you have the right for bears to arm. You know, And you know, they had a cartoon in one of the papers where there was a deer driving a truck or a car, and it had a man laying across the hood. And you know, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But I have seen, you know, pictures of videos where the white-tailed deer does starve, and it's mercy.
Yeah.
Up north in Michigan, the season for fawning is usually in the spring. And I had a friend who taught me to fish. I was an avid angler, which I no longer am. When he would see a doe with a fawn, and it was late summer or towards the fall, he would tell me that fawn's not going to make it through the winter. He would know. He knows. You know. He would know that the she fawned too late in the season, and chances are it's not going to make it in the winter. And I really think that, you know, when animals attack, and I think somebody wrote a book about that, when animals attack, they do it for a reason. The same way, you know, you have a gun in your house. You're protecting your property. Well, that's what they're doing. They're doing it in a natural way. But nature has a balance. You know, that's why you have your predators and your prey. There's a balance. Now, Thompson gazelles, they probably have maybe, say, 100,000 of them. You know, so the leopards and the cheetahs, and they're not going to run out of meat. But yet the cheetahs have to go farther to find the herds of gazelles and antelope because of habitat destruction. The gazelles, they're herbivores. They have to eat the grasses. And if the companies are coming in and cutting down trees and digging up the land to build more buildings in there, those prey animals have to move out somewhere so they can graze. So the big cats that feed on them have to travel farther. And say a cheetah has two cubs, she has to bring in enough meat to feed those babies so they get stronger. And the same thing in the Arctic with the polar bears. They're usually they're solitary animals. The male, you know, of course, will seek out a female when she's in season. And you've seen a lot of pictures of them that have two cubs, and very rarely will they have three. But because of the lack of food sources, that reproduction is getting down to one. Because when a bear comes out of hibernation, they have lost weight. Well, that would be easy if people could do that. Go to sleep, and, you know, for overnight and yeah. lose 30 pounds.
Well, I would
but
love
she's
that.
She's got to come out. Right. She has to come out, find meat, so she can keep her nursing up. Because the cubs come out of the den, they just want to play.
Right.
But she's got to find seals. And nature gives them such a sense of smell. When I worked at the zoo and I was working in the Arctic ring where our polar bears were, I would see them up on they had artificial ice, but it was cold, you know, so they felt like they were walking on ice. I would see them prance and then stop and put their nose in the air. And when I had little kids around me, you know, they'd say, well, oh, look at what are they doing? I said, he can probably smell the pizza
yeah.
at the cafe
yeah.
when you first came in. They can smell a mile away. A polar bear can smell 4 feet under the ice. So they can smell that meat of a seal swimming. They know when there's a seal cub. And, you know, seals, like prairie dogs, have two holes, two openings.
Yeah.
So they can escape quickly. And the polar bear can smell that baby seal. And what they do is they pounce on that ice until they break enough that they can grab the seal out. Well, if it's a baby seal, it's enough to feed the mother. Mm. And it's getting difficult for them to get the bigger seals or walruses because of the ice melting. Well, I'm just going to throw this little fact in, Frank. Yeah. Did you know the polar bears are left-handed?
No, I didn't know that at all.
Yes, yeah, they're left-handed. They walk pigeon-toed.
Wow.
And they're left-pawed, I'd say. When they grab out a seal, they use their left paw. Don't ask me why. Maybe the left paw, polar bears make better lovers, whatever. But they use that, and they just their nails are really long and sharp. And they can just scoop that seal out. And it also helps for, you know, ripping the meat. But because of the climate change and the melting, the fast melting of the Arctic ice, they have to swim farther distances now to get to a seal or a walrus colony. And, you know, the seals and the walruses, they got it pretty easy because they're fish eaters. But still, that's dangerous with all the pollutants going into the water. And the polar bears are excellent swimmers. They can swim a long time. But now that the food supply is getting scarce, the ice floes are melting, they have to swim longer distances. And they can drown, and they drown because of the lack of energy, because they can't find the food. They'd be very, very lucky if a whale carcass floats up. Then they'll have a feast.
Oh, for a while too. But look,
yeah, for a while.
Just wonderful stuff. I love those tidbits about polar bears being left-handed or left-pawed, and. it's incredible. Wildlife is incredible, and this is why we have to bring awareness to make sure that it survives and that it doesn't become extinct. Diane Brisky has been our very special guest. She is a wonderful, wonderful author and part of an awareness series that we're doing. She a big part. It's based on her and her work and her life. Diane Brisky is the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Frank McKay here, very proud of what we're doing here, and we encourage everyone to binge listen everything that's going on. Diane, thank you very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome. I really enjoy talking to you, and I hope that the listeners out there can take something with them.
Well, same here. Diane Brisky, everyone, get the book, Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction, and again, Diane Brisky, more next week. With Diane Brisky. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down. This is Frank McKay.